AI was not used in the creation of this podcast. This is the Social Geek Radio Network. Geeks, and welcome to the Social Geek Podcast. I'm Jack Munson, your host and marketing consigliere. Today, we've got an update from Amanda Dempsey on the brand new FTC ruling on non-competes and what it means for franchises. Then a chat with multi-unit, multi-brand, and multi-generation family team, Jerry Akers and Sam Regis. Today's episode is brought to you by Northeast Color, Hughes, Answer Connect, and the conversations start right after a quick tip from Career Plug. Hundreds of franchise brands rely on Career Plug to help franchisees hire and retain employees. Here's Career Plug's retention tip of the week. Hire the right people who share your core values and are invested in your company's growth. Take the time to develop a structured hiring process with interview questions dedicated to your core values. This will help you produce the right hires every time. For more retention tips, download your free copy of CareerPlug's hiring playbook, How to Hire, at careerplug.com/how to hire. It's been a pretty busy week in franchise news. To help guide us through all of this, I asked Amanda Dempsey, partner at Saxton & Stump, to join us today. Amanda, how are you?
I'm great, Jack. Thanks so much for having me on today.
So, issue number one, the FTC has basically outlawed the non-compete agreement. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty close to accurate. So, they issued a proposed final rule this week. There is a little bit of time to breathe on this one because it doesn't actually go into effect for 120 days. So it does give people some time to get their head around this. And I also suspect there'll be some legal challenges during that time period. So people don't have to go running quite yet, but that is, that's true. They passed the proposed final rule this week.
So in about 4 months, we can no longer have non-compete commitments out for new hires, and that will affect previously signed non-competes too. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the rule as it's written says that employers are not permitted to enter into new non-compete agreements with employees. And it also retroactively affects existing agreements. There is a limited carve out for what they call senior executives. And we can dive into that if people are interested. But for the most part, it does affect non-competes going forward and then existing non-competes. It actually puts an onus on employers to go back, look at all of their existing contracts, and they actually have to affirmatively notify any employees that have non-competes and let them know that they would no longer be in effect after August 22nd, I think, is the date as of right now.
That sounds like a little bit of work that could be coming our way for some people who really need to go back and find all of the non-competes and reach out, because it's not just the people who are currently working for your franchise firm or any other kind of business, but it's people who would be part of that. Let's say they had a 1 year non-compete. It's people who have left in the past year, but are still, you know, technically underneath that agreement that you have to let them know. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, certainly the impact will be more for certain types of industries and certain types of people that have, you know, a lot more employees, of course. So the work definitely depends on the size of your company. But yes, I mean, if it will be, it's there's an affirmative obligation to do it. There's actually a sample clause in the rule that explains, how the FTC would like you to do it. For larger companies, they are certainly probably already going back and taking stock of who they have to notify. And, quite frankly, it's probably finding some of these people, right? So that
Yeah.
they can comply with the notice obligation, making sure that, they're using whatever address or contact information they have for those people, as you said, that have left what would still be technically in their non-compete period.
Was this a big surprise, or is this something that most people who have been watching this have been anticipating this, or how would you characterize the ruling?
Yeah, so I mean the well, I guess it's nice. One thing about the FTC and a lot of these a lot of our government agencies is they put proposed rules and rules that they're considering out for public comment. So we've known about it and that it's been coming for a little while. The other thing is that there's been a lot of state activity on this particular issue in the past handful of years. California, for example, has pretty much outlaws non-competes as well. And there's other states that are, on top of that as well. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily a surprise. The breadth of it was a little bit surprising to me. I didn't think that it would, just personally, for example, I did not think it would be retroactive.
Yeah.
Meaning I think that's a heavy lift, and I was surprised to see it kind of go that far.
Do you think there would be a lot of challenges to that, especially the retroactive ones?
I do. I think there's going to be legal challenges to this, really from all fronts. I just think that, there's a fair amount of businesses that think this is an overreach, that it's not a place for government to dictate this part of business. And so I think there will be kind of large scale challenges to this. I think, I don't think 120 days is reasonable given what I think will be coming.
Yeah, that's pretty fast turnaround, actually. You mentioned a couple of things that were not included in on this, including some carve outs for senior level executives. I think we're probably talking about people in the C-suite who are actually making policy decisions for a company that it's based on level of income. Is that right?
That's right. So there's a few key exceptions that I think ge for general businesses, and then also for our friends in the franchise industry that I'd like to talk about a little bit. So the senior executive ex exception that carves out executive contracts for certain types of workers. It's people making policy decisions, and they're making an excess of $150,000 a year. Notably, that exception is just for existing contracts. So companies still will not be able to enter into new non-competes with senior executives. So that's still off the table. But that gives them some breathing room with, some of their basically their C-suite executives that are making policy decisions and some of those what I consider to be executive compensation agreements that may have had a large non-compete section in it and were negotiated, many years ago. So that's one. The second one is for purchase and sale transactions. So non-competes in purchase and sale transactions are unaffected by this rule, and the FTC specifically called that out. And the idea there is that that's more of a it's a B2B, a business to business relationship, not so much employer employee. But I think they wanted to make that clear that, this is really a regulation for employment situations, not so
Yeah.
much transactional situations. So that's an exception as well. And then the third one, where we'll probably spend a lot more time, is in the franchise context. So our friends at IFA lobbied for this one, and it was pretty much accepted. But the exception is that it does not apply. This rule does not apply to the franchisor-franchisee relationship. So what does that mean exactly? That means the contracts between the franchisor and its franchisees with their non-compete obligations that exist during the term of a franchise contract and then also post-termination. Again, the rationale is the same, that this is a business relationship. So it's two businesses entering into a contract, right, over a period of time. So it doesn't apply to that relationship. And again, I mean, this is it's positive for us in franchising. We're always talking about that employment relationship and how we in the franchise industry do not believe that that is the case. There's no employment relationship between a franchisor and its franchisees. And so this ruling exempts us from that, right? Exempts that relationship from this non-compete ban, but it also seems to be a recognition that there is no employment relationship and thus this would not apply.
Yeah, it's interesting that in a time when we're sitting here on the cusp of the joint employer rule possibly going away and waiting for the president to sign another law, that suddenly the FTC is basically agreeing with all of us that this is a franchisor and a franchisee, two business entities doing work together, not an employer-employee relationship.
Yeah, I think that's, I think it gives us some insight into the fact that the FTC is aware of what, of the claims that we've made on that front. I think that where the joint employer rule comes in is that they're always examining whether specific franchisors are kind of jumping that line, right? And going over the line and creating an employment relationship. But this is, I think this is a nice recognition that, hey, they see franchising, they understand what it is, and that, they're willing to exempt it from this particular rule because of basically just what we're saying, that it's not an employment relationship, but rather a business transaction.
The other thing that I saw in one of the things that you released this week was that businesses are still permitted to use NDAs. Tell me about that. That's not affected by this because NDAs have suddenly been a very popular thing with everyone from politicians to talk show hosts, right? Everybody's got an NDA these days.
That's true. And so I will say that, while the franchise relationship is exempt, there are, the relationships between the franchisors and their internal staff, right? So their C-suite and their employees, and then also the franchisees with their internal staff, so their employees that are, operating their business, those relationships are still subject to this rule, right? So we still have this proprietary information that we're worried about protecting, right? Because, candidly, franchisees do share that, even if it's on a limited situation with their employees. And the franchisor is, of course, sharing that information with their staff so that they're, able to train appropriately and support franchisees. So there is, I wouldn't say we're completely out of the woods with it because we still have that concern about, whether our proprietary information is safe. And the FTC actually spoke about that a lot in the rule, and about some of the protections that they that are still in place for those types of situations. I don't want to say they suggest, but they do mention a few in the rule that are still viable options for protecting, proprietary information. And the number one is the NDA, right? So the non-disclosure agreement, they are still on the table for any of these relationships that are affected by the ban. And the only real limitation is that the FTC's did mention that, if you call it an NDA and it's a non-compete, then, obviously that wouldn't apply. You have to carefully craft them and make sure that it's really about the disclosure of the information, the proprietary information, and not about taking a competing position. But you can still, well craft an NDA to make sure that, if somebody's going to a new company, they can't share the secret sauce with that new
Yeah,
company.
got it.
That's one method. And then the other method that, we like to, as attorneys and as, people that dabble in intellectual property, we always like to remind people that there's other types of intellectual property protection that you can use. I mean, your manuals are copy, they're subject to copyright protection. You have your trademarks, you have patents, you can use those. You can use invention assignment agreements so that if people are coming up with new ideas while they're your employee, you can protect that new information, that new system advancement through those types of agreements. So all of those are still on the table.
Excellent. It sounds like you're really on the leading edge of this, especially in the franchise space. Is there anything else that that you wanted to share about this recent ruling or anything else with the non-disclosure situation that our listeners should know about this week?
Yeah, I think that So yes, we do try to be kind of on top of it, and we have a great labor and employment team, and an antitrust team, and a franchise team, IP team here that have all been working together to kind of get some of this stuff worked out and advise our clients well on it. So I would say, this is while this is new territory for sure, I think there's a couple things to keep in mind. One of them is you have time to prepare. So, if you're a company that thinks this is going to take a large effect on you, start taking stock of your agreements and then contact counsel to see A, what your affirmative obligations are, right? So we talked about notice earlier, what you have to do, and then B, there are avenues for protection, right, that don't involve restraining employees post termination or post voluntary dismissal. So speak with your attorneys about what those are. I think that non-compete agreements have made it easy for companies in the past because they just say, oh, we'll just have them sign a non-compete. We don't
Right.
have to worry about them
We'll point
taking
to
them.
that. Yeah. And if they want their
Right.
final paycheck, they better sign this thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So that, that was a way to kind of just really and easily ensure that, that stuff, all of your secret sauce, as I said, isn't walking out the door with you. But there's a lot of interesting tactics and ways that you can do it. And if we're protecting our IP, at the outset, right? So we have these NDAs, we have trade secret policies in place, all of that. The chance that things are walking out the door with an employee become less and less. So there's definitely time to prepare and to get yourself ready for, what this might look like in the future. And then the third thing is really just like everybody just keep their eyes peeled. I don't think this is over. I don't think, that necessarily like on August 22nd, when everyone's on vacation, that they're going to have to drop everything and deal with this.
Yeah, that's
I think there's
interesting
probably,
timing, right? For the end of summer.
I think I definitely think there's more to come on this, and so just meet with the people that you trust and just make a plan. But it's not, the sky's not falling, and many thanks to the IFA for making sure that they basically put the franchise position in front of the FTC, because that was really important for us.
Excellent. I will second that. And Amanda, if anybody has questions for you and they want to learn a little bit more, do you have some resources online on the website or can they contact you? What's the best way to go?
Absolutely. So both our employment team, our franchise team, and our IP team have published articles on this that are all, they're all related, but they have different spins depending on what exactly you're looking for. So you can find those resources on our website. It's www.saxtonstump.com, or you can find it on, you can call me or email me. My email is add@saxtonstump.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. All of our stuff is available for you, and I'd be happy to just kind of guide you through it if you need some help.
Great. And we'll have links to all of those places in today's show notes. Amanda Dempsey, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed today.
Thank you so much. I love talking about this stuff. So anytime, Jack. Thanks again.
Back in a moment after this word from Answer Connect. How can you unlock millions in annual revenue? Don't miss out on 30% of your phone calls. At Answer Connect, they've got the solution for franchisors, franchisees, suppliers, and brokers. If you can't answer your calls, Answer Connect can. Reclaim your revenue today. If you need help, call my good friend Karen Booz at 888-822-2034. That's 888-822-2034. Cybersecurity is the biggest risk to your business. Cybercriminals can steal your data, steal your money, and even impact your ability to stay open. Protect your business with Hughes Managed Cybersecurity. The Hughes suite of cybersecurity services protects, detects, and responds to cyber threats so you can focus on running your business. Reach out to find out how Hughes can become your cybersecurity partner. Visit hughes.com/franchise. Here's another tip from Northeast Color. Leverage your supplier partners to become compulsively consistent. If the point of a franchise is to deliver a consistent experience for your client, then every component of that experience should meet a universal standard with as little variation as possible. To that end, we recommend looking for supplier partners that have the resources and expertise necessary to serve your entire network in both the long and short term, ensuring that prices, materials, and performance in the field remain consistent for your franchisees and ultimately for your clients as well. Learn more now at northeastcolor.com. Joining me now is a dynamic duo of multi-unit franchisee-ism from The Joint Chiropractic and Great Clips. It's Jerry Akers. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, how you doing, Jack?
Good to hear and see you again, my friend. And along with Jerry, his daughter, Sam Regis. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for having me.
It was nice meeting you at the International Franchise Association convention earlier this year. And I'm really interested to hear your story working with Jerry and how that whole sort of generational change is happening. Jerry, give us a little bit of your backstory. You've had some success with a couple of really great franchise brands for a while, right?
Yeah, so we're 18 years into Great Clips. When we started, Jack, we only wanted one, and it just kind of took on a life of its own once we turned around the first one. And so now, 18 years later, we've got 34 across Nebraska and Iowa, and I've got The Joint Chiropractic. I'm the regional developer for Iowa, Nebraska, with five open clinics of my own and three others that I support for other franchisees. In 2008, we had an opportunity through our growth, and because two of our daughters were in a position where, you know, they were kind of looking for something different, that we were able to bring them in. And it's really become a family affair, Jack.
Yeah, we talk about the franchise family, but you guys really practice it, you know, really getting the whole family involved. Sam, tell me your experience so far. How long have you been involved in the franchise side of life?
So that's a great question, and that's where we'll start to show you some of our family dynamic here. It was actually 2010, because that's when my sister and I got in the business. In 2010, we were able to join the business because in our Great Clips franchise, we were growing pretty rapidly because we were going from 5 to 8 salons, and it ended up being in 1 week because of how real estate works out for the one that was building out and how an acquisition works out for the one that we were purchasing or the two we were purchasing. And, you know, we were able to join in at that time full time, but I had been in 6 months prior part time because that's all that they could have me for, because my mom and dad both wanted to pay me reasonably, and yet they didn't have the work or the funds within the business to pay me a full-time job for a while. So I was our mascot for a long time. I went to a lot of marketing events, right? Like just trying to like earn my keep, so to speak.
That's called on-the-job training, right, Jerry?
Yeah.
That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
And it was great. I loved all of that time, and it really taught me a lot about, you know, one side of the business. But when I came in full time, it became this conversation of, what is no one else in the business doing? Well, mom and dad both say, we don't know anything about technology, so you get to do that. And we need somebody to be a scheduling expert, so you get to do that too, which was fine, right? I learned my way into those things and became dad's sidekick for a while in operations. And now I've taken over operations completely and all the things that go with it.
Well, and there's probably nothing more important than scheduling for your business, right? And technology, I would assume, goes hand in hand with scheduling. Is that all happening now through an app? Is it, you know, some other way that customers are scheduling appointments, or how does that work now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So within Great Clips, because we're all convenience-based, we don't take appointments for customers. However, our staff use lots of technology to make sure that the business is operating in the most efficient way possible. And so our schedules do have some, you know, computer brain behind them, where our corporate office and software vendor have worked really hard to make as much of that automatic as possible, but it still requires a human to make some decisions because we're in a people business, right? When it comes to our staff and our customers, things change and we have to kind of work with the ebbs and flow of the traffic and try and do the best we can.
So, Jerry, let me ask you about shifting responsibilities over to Sam and maybe some other family members as well. Where do you get to in the point of your career where you wanted to have one location and now you've got 34, which I love that, by the way. Where do you get to the point where it's like, you know what, we need to bring in a cleanup hitter here, right? Like we got to bring in somebody else to do, this task or that task, and now that's going to be a full-time person, and we need to move somebody else in. Where do you see that happening, and at what point in your role do you say, okay, bring in someone new?
So we I think, Jack, that depends on the size of your organization. Some brands, each unit spins out more revenue and profit than other brands do. So you got to have multiple units. So for each brand, I think it's a little different. For us, we felt eight. When we went from five to eight, there was more responsibility to go around than the two of us could do. Additionally, as Sam mentioned, there were two things coming into play more and more, right, in that evolutionary period, which was the technology piece and advanced scheduling. Neither my wife or I really wanted to do either one of those. So they kind of happened about at the same time that we had already decided that we needed some extra help. Sam was at a crossroads in her career where she could go different ways, and she'd been working part-time for us anyhow while she was still in another job. And I just asked her, is this something that you would be interested in? Because she had not grown up with Great Clips. We got into Great Clips while she was in college. She knew
Oh,
nothing about it.
right.
So, she spent a little time with us and finally decided it was a good time to go. It was great for us. We got to shed things that we weren't good at and didn't want to do so we could focus more of our attention on, kind of our core competencies. She had the opportunity to literally work hand in hand with corporate to learn those pieces rather than from us. So she got a better education than she would have with us. And it was just a great time. Her sister, on the other hand, was in a position in college where literally I think it was her first year in college, there was just a incident that happened in her educational path where she go, I don't want to do that anymore. I can't see doing that for a career. She'd been working part-time through high school and college with payroll with my wife, and she said, what degree should I get that would fit for working with you guys? So she got degrees in human resources, accounting, and psychology. And she came in shortly thereafter, Sam did, and took on, started working with her mom on payroll and HR and all of those kinds of things. So going from five to eight was kind of our tipping point. Then as we grew, we didn't really need to add more people. Because we already had a little bit of extra infrastructure, we just kind of gave them more to do.
I love that idea of a degree in HR, accounting, and psychology. What else do you need to run a local business, right? Like those are pretty much the three things that everybody needs to learn. And I like that idea too of Sam, you didn't grow up in the business. A lot of times in franchising, we hear about, the kid that at, 5 years old was back in the kitchen or, out on the truck with dad or something like that. It's interesting that you came into it and your parents got into this a little bit later because maybe you didn't have the preconceived notions that you would have had if you actually grew up in one of the salons.
Yeah, I absolutely think that that's true. We really hadn't had conversations when they got into Great Clips. It wasn't like this big family meeting where we decided like this is a thing we're all doing. That wasn't part of it, right? It really was a situation, as Dad explained, that I was kind of between things, and I had heard them talking about things because when you own your own business, you talk about it all the time, right? I mean, you should at least.
Right.
Or maybe you shouldn't, I don't know. But that's what we do.
Well,
And
I think you
so,
just do. I think
yeah.
that's across all small business owners. They just do. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So I had heard them talking about some of those things. And within the industry that I was in initially, I wasn't really able to use some of my presentation skills, some of my people skills, so to speak. And so it just was going to make sense. Now, growing up, I've always been very similar to my dad and spent a lot of time with him and picked up on a lot of things that he does. And so it did start to make a lot of sense when we talked about what does long term look like? We need to have people that can do these things because at some point, mom and dad aren't going to do all the things, right? So Shelly and I, that's my sister, we each took on, half of the business, so to speak, when we first came in. And it really was for myself, the things that just needed to be done. For my sister, they were changing payroll processes when she came on full time. And my mom said, I don't want to learn how to do all of this online. I'm not interested. That's not my jam. And so that just became a natural transition. And I think that anytime someone within a business, especially a small business owner, is able to find a natural transition, don't hesitate. That's one of the biggest things that I would say is I think we can spend a lot of time as analytical folk that we really try and dive in, like, is this the best thing? Is this the right time? Well, what if it's not? Well, sometimes we really do have to let sort of nature take its course, right? And just like let it happen because that's what makes sense.
Well, and Jack, the tag team on that, when she's talking about late, nature taking its course and so on, the kids worked under us for several years. And then when COVID happened, we were at the lake protecting my 80-year-old in-laws from everything going on with that. And those kids in their early 30s, Sam might correct me, but late 20s, early 30s, literally closed our business down, probably at that time, 26 locations or something like that. Closed it down, stayed in contact with employees throughout the 7 weeks or whatever we were closed, did all the homework to get everything in place for personal protection so that we could open back up, and then brought employees back and started these all back up over a period of time when my wife and I were out of pocket. We couldn't help them. We were gone. So when we got back, we all talked about it, and I literally said, we have never been anything through anything as catastrophic as that. And these young people did it as well, if not better than we did. So this seems like a great time in our process to just gradually step back and let them take on 100% of the roles.
Yeah, what a trial by fire, right? And two, I think we always, I think for the rest of our careers, we're going to talk about what franchising was like during the lockdown periods. And I think whatever your business was like pre-2020, it's different now, right? So I think there's this opportunity for a lot of young operators to say, well, I might not have the experience that somebody who's been around this industry for 25 years has, but none of that matters because it all changed 4 or 5 years ago and it's never going back. And this is the new normal. This is what it's like to run a business now, especially in your industry, where, Jerry, you and I were talking about this when we were in Phoenix. It's amazing that you and so many other great operators still have a business. And so kudos, Sam, to you and your family members for making that happen during those times. Jerry, I want to before we go, I want to ask you about your new venture, Z Dynamics. Tell me what on earth this is.
Well, Jack, about 4 years ago, I co-wrote a best-selling book on franchising called Live It to Own It, and literally, it was my effort to help struggling franchisees, through reading it, find some support and so on. And what ended up happening was it took on a life of its own. I started getting phone calls mainly from franchisees at that time, wanting support and coaching and, somebody to talk to and things like that. So I just handled it on the fly for a while. And then it grew to the point where I needed help and I was getting so many calls. So I reached out to some wonderful, very, very smart young ladies who were behind the scenes and putting the book together and some of the things we did with it. And they became partners in a new company I started called Z Dynamics that is tasked with helping fill gaps in franchising, helping work with emerging brands as they try and navigate working with franchisees from an educational standpoint, from real estate and construction and all the things that they have to know, and yet nobody knows, including many of the young franchisors. So we're trying. There's a lot of problems in franchising that turn into lawsuits and things in DC at Capitol Hill and things like that. So I'm trying from the grassroots up to get to franchisors and franchisees before those things get out of control and step into the fray and try and fix those things.
That sounds terrific. And we'll have contact information in today's show notes if anyone would like to have a private discussion with you about how you might be able to help them fill some of those gaps. And you mentioned going to DC. I'm sure I will see you on Capitol Hill as part of the Midwest contingency this year at the IFA Public Affairs Days in September. And I will also see you, I hope, in Nashville at the IFA Summer Board Meeting coming up in just a few weeks.
You will, Jack. You know me, I'm IFA through and through. So you and I kind of run in the same groups.
Yeah, especially when they're going to have the meetings in Nashville. I said, "Oh, okay. Well, I'm in on that." So, all
Yeah,
right, very
sure.
good, my friend. I will see you there in June of this year. Sam, I hope to see you again very soon at an IFA event. And thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks again to all of today's guests, Amanda Dempsey, Sam Regis, and Jerry Akers. And thank you for listening and staying connected on the Social Geek Radio Network.